I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast.
Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, we have Joe Bulik on the show, and we're going to dive a little bit into his OmniFocus setup in a lot of ways. We don't really dive into apps all that much, but we talk about OmniFocus quite a bit in this episode, as well as a lot of other productivity practices. And I'm really, really excited to chat with Joe because I've never really had a chance to do that before in terms of a full-on weekly episode. We had a couple other chats for bonus episodes that our Patreon supporters get, but this one's full of productivity goodness. So I encourage you to sit back and enjoy the ride as I chat with Joe Bulik here on the Productivityist Podcast. I would like to welcome Joe Bulik to the Productivityist Podcast. Joe, thanks for joining me today.
Certainly, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You know, we talked about this as we were getting to record. We've known each other online for a fair number of years, but never actually have exchanged, you know, intonations over the microphone.
It's true. I feel like we have had a number of interactions and we should have connected before now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it's taken this long.
Like mics on mics, it would have been a no-brainer back when I was doing that with Schecter. Like there's so many, you know, so many hours. But now we've done it. So and thanks to Josh Arench for Shawit.
Yes, I actually run a podcast with him. So
there you go. So he basically endorsed you. So what's the podcast you do?
That one is Theoretical Accountability.
Yep.
So if you're familiar with the 12-week year.
Yep.
That's the theoretical accountability that comes with that.
Yeah. So we'll have that linked in the show notes, but I'm glad that you guys, I'm glad we got the chance to connect. And I want to talk today about the evolution of productivity apps. And specifically, you're a wizard at OmniFocus. I'm not so much of a wizard anymore. I think I've stepped back from OmniFocus in recent years.
Well, what are you using?
I'm using Todoist for my own stuff that I want to keep internal. But then I use Asana for all the team-based stuff. And the reason I left OmniFocus behind, and I know this might be a bit more of a tech nerdy episode for those of you listening, but you know, I have a license to do this every once in a while, so there you go.
It's my show. You got to turn it loose on occasion.
It's my show. You know, the one thing that I remember when I did the OmniFocus setup a number of years ago, which we were talking about again before we went on the air, is the collaboration component. It's very challenging to do collaboration with not just OmniFocus. There's other apps. The Things comes to mind. There's several of them where collaboration is challenging. It's not impossible, but it's challenging. And that was one thing. And then again, tools like Todoist, Asana, those tools allow for multiple, if you want to call them contexts or modes or whatever, per task. You can kind of do that with OmniFocus in nested contexts, but it's not as simple, because when I'm talking to people about it, they're like, okay, so this context lives inside this other context. So it's a bit for some people to get their head around. But what I love about OmniFocus and always have, it's as simple as you want it to be, but as powerful as you need it to be for individual task management.
Yes, and I'm one of those that likes to make it more powerful. So
you're perspectiving the crap out of it.
yes. Well, kind of. I do a lot of Apple scripting, so yeah. I write a lot of my own stuff.
So let's talk about the barrier that I mentioned right away is the collaboration barrier. Have you managed to work your way around that? Or because there are some people out there that I've seen that what they do is they have their team, kind of like what I do with Todoist, I guess, to a point, is that they've got all their team stuff in like Asana or Trello or wherever they've got it. But then they've got it, they've got an automation set up or some sort of automation where it creates the task in OmniFocus for them so that they don't have to open these larger scale tools and they can focus ultimately on their stuff. Like, do you kind of, when you work with people, or do you find that's something that you do? Or like, how do you make it when you want to work collaboratively with OmniFocus? Is that something that even concerns you?
No.
Okay, there you go.
It's not something I deal with at all. And that might be part of my reasoning for sticking with it. I know they've actually got it on their roadmap to start to solve some of this at some point this year. I don't know when, who knows, they are a bit deceptive. Well, maybe not deceptive, but it's hard to nail down when they're going to release things.
They're ambiguous, which is kind of interesting.
There you go. There you go.
For a task management app to be ambiguous is kind of an oxymoron, but I get it.
Right, right. So, yeah. So I don't really deal with the whole collaborative thing just because I know that. So, for example, I'm a heavy developer. I do a lot of writing code, building websites, that sort of thing. But I'm gaining new clients on a weekly basis, and they're gone within 2 or 3 weeks. If they come back into my life, that's fine. That's kind of a repeat thing, but that's not super frequent. So I don't ever go through the process of setting up some form of project management that I do with them. It's all through our glorious process of email. So I have to manage all of the chasing and all of the initial contact and pieces. I have to manage all of that on my own. It's not something I have to share with them. Mm. If I actually do have to share something with them, honestly, it's through like Google Docs or something like Quip or basically whatever they're using. I just kind of morph myself into using theirs, which means I'm creating all kinds of tasks in OmniFocus and putting links and stuff in there so that I don't lose track of what's where. So that's if anything, that's the tricky part, is just managing the resources that go with it.
So if someone's using OmniFocus, and we'll dive into OmniFocus particularly for a little bit so we can get some of this magical stuff kind of out there. What's one thing that somebody can do that they're probably not doing that will level up their OmniFocus experience? And I mean, that's a pretty open-ended question, but so a lot of people, they look at OmniFocus and they see everything at once and it kind of freaks them out. Like what recommendations do you have, or what can someone do that if they're using OmniFocus and they want to leverage it more and maybe make it more quote unquote focused, what's some of the tips and tricks that you can share?
Well, the one that I've been having this conversation a lot lately, not necessarily online, but with some people. Well, I say not online, but it's via email in a lot of cases. But the one place that I see a lot of people getting hung up on with OmniFocus is the context piece. You kind of mentioned this earlier, like the multiple contexts bit nested and going down that path. It's led a number of people to leaving OmniFocus and going to things like To-Do or Todoist. Like I see people doing that. But I tend to recommend that instead of trying to figure out how many different contexts something could apply to a task, rather focus on the context that it should be.
Right.
So if you get the difference there, I tend to assign a context to a task based on which context is best suited for that task. So, prime example is if I'm doing some form of communication, say I need to send an email to a new client that I just discovered and I want to try to get that particular project. I could send that email from my phone, but I know that I have enough little extra tidbits on my Mac that I'm better off sending that email from my Mac. So I'll give it the context of my MacBook as opposed to
email,
as opposed to my phone, right?
Or
in that case,
or even just email in general, right?
Right. I could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think this is interesting because when I look at, like, when I talk about mode based work, which is again, it's I would say it's an evolution or a spin on context in a lot of ways. But every, like, I have categories of mode, so they're theme based, resource based, energy based, activity based, or time based, and you get to choose. So for some people, email might be what they need. And that means that they can send it from whatever email program that they want and it doesn't matter. But in your case, like you said, there's a specificity there that, look, this stuff exists on the MacBook. That's a resource that I need to leverage. So that's what it needs to be. And then once that, I would imagine, and maybe I'm getting ahead of ourselves here, but once that's an established context for you, then that's something, or for anyone, then that's something that they can know, oh, I have this already in here. I don't need to put MacBook : Evernote or MacBook : because you could put that in the task, right? You'd say, hey, go into Evernote and grab this. I think people get too caught up in the, let's drill it down to the minutia.
Yes, absolutely. Because for me, I know that there are certain times of the day when I'm best suited in certain contexts. Now, just to clarify, most of my contexts are the exact tools. So my MacBook, my phone, I've got a whiteboard in my office, pen and paper, like those are my contexts, or I'll have a specific location. So I'm the IT director at our church, so I need to have our church as one of my contexts because I can't pull cable for the church at my house. It just doesn't work. So there are some things like that I have to have in detail, but that's how I set up my context. And I know that if I've got certain projects that need to be done sooner rather than later, I tend to pull up the project and then put myself in those contexts. Because, you know, this is the age old thing that we've got going on right now is all of our tools are with us all the time. So how do you nail down what context you're in if all of them are with you at one time? And that's where I tend to differentiate with choosing the one that's best suited for it and then deliberately putting myself with that particular context or that tool in this case so that I'm able to accomplish more. And I know that if I'm looking at a given context and there's a whole bunch on it and it's just overwhelming, that's an indicator to me that I've got too much, either too much going on or I need to break that context out in more detail. Or if I'm looking at a context and there's nothing on it, do I really need it anymore? Mm. Like I'm always doing some of that fine-tuning process. So you come talk to me in about 3 months, Mike, and my context will probably be slightly different. And then another month later, they'll be slightly different again. They're always morphing.
Okay, so how do you keep, and this is another pain point for a lot of people, how do you keep the tweaking from getting in the way of the, you know, executing?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, because I know that it's easy to get caught up in wanting to just continue making it better and better and better.
Yeah. Optimization for sake of optimizing. But why are you optimizing if you're not executing, right?
Right. I have a thing where I do a monthly review. So I'm kind of a review Nazi, if you will. And I do the whole weekly review thing. I do a monthly review as well. And during that monthly review, that's when I reevaluate my contexts. So it's not something that I'm always, I guess I shouldn't say I'm always looking at it. It's where I'm setting time aside once a month to do that. And then also during that monthly period, I give myself like half a day or sometimes a full day to write scripts and such to create features that I want in my tools so that I know for the next month if I'm using that, it can speed things up for me. So I have a handful of scripts that I've written for OmniFocus just to make things easier on myself. And it's come from those periods where I've sat down specifically on this specific day to talk through this with myself and come up with something to make it better. But like you say, if I were to do that, you know, two or three times a week, I would spend way more time coming up with things that make it new and shiny or cool or fun. And they don't actually help me in the long run.
So your Apple scripts, do you, first off, do you have them readily available for anybody to kind of put through the paces, or are they specifically designed for what your workflow is? Yeah. Okay.
I have them, they're on GitHub, so I can give you a link to that.
We'll throw that in the show notes. That'd be great. Because I know there are some people here that are definitely into OmniFocus and listening, and that would be helpful, especially if they're not afraid to get, because scripting can be a very daunting realm to jump into, right?
Right. It scares a lot of people.
Yeah. Cause they're not sure. Cause it's kind of like automation in a lot of ways. Like this automation, like using something like Zapier or IFTTT, you know, if it breaks, then you got to dig into why it broke. Whereas if the app comes to you as is, like OmniFocus does, I mean, even some people even get freaked out about adding their own custom icons to it. They're like, whoa, could that break it? No, it's not going to break it. It'll be fine. Let's talk about the things that you, some of the other tricks that you use to kind of have OmniFocus weave its magic. And then I want to talk, and then further to that, what are the things that you wish OmniFocus had that it doesn't have right now?
So some of the things that I wish it had, they're working on right now.
Yep.
I use the app Do that does the nagging reminder thing.
Yeah, reminders on steroids, yeah.
Right. And I love that for things like I need to grind coffee tonight because I grind it like once a week. And when I run out, I need to grind more. But if I forget tonight, that's a problem tomorrow morning because developers, coffee, they go together quite well.
Yep.
And I don't want that to fall through the cracks. Well, when I get off work, I may or may not look at OmniFocus much just because it's my time to go chill with the fam. So I don't want to lose track of that. So I use Do to set the nagging reminder thing to make sure that I have that done. I'd love to morph that into OmniFocus, but it sounds like they're working on something like that. I hope that their implementation of it is easy to get things into it and set it up. But, you know, that's me being a bit nitpicky with it. To be honest with you, Mike, I don't really get too bent out of shape over wanting new features with it, because I've been using OmniFocus now for, I guess, 4.5 years, maybe 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And back in OmniFocus 1.
Yep, just at the tail end of it, to be honest, really. Like, it was, yes, yeah, just before it morphed into the what it's become now, so.
Right. I used it for about a year, I think, before they brought out OmniFocus 2. Mm-hmm. But I've used it long enough that I've learned how to make the Mac my central hub. And the phone is mostly an input device and a list viewer for me. And I set up the perspectives in it so that I can see what I want to see when I want to see them. But other than that, I don't really get too bent out of shape of wanting new things with it. If they come up with stuff that makes it easier for me to input things, like when they released the URL schemes and the task paper input process for templates and such, that was a bit of a game changer for me, because I could create entire projects from my phone, which was a big deal for me. But once I've got that, I'm not too picky with it, I guess. So I don't mind their slower release schedule as compared to some. I'm okay with it.
Well, and they're also not a software as a service, as so many of these other ones are, right? Which leads me to kind of where I want to go next, which is the kind of the evolution of productivity apps. Because in the decade plus that I've been studying productivity, we've seen it go from things like Kinkless GTD and IGTD to apps like SchedPal and these other ones that have the AI built in, so that you could say, okay, well, this should be scheduled here based on your on your preferences. What do you look for in a tool? Like, I mean, obviously OmniFocus is handling most of those things. When you were first getting into OmniFocus, like what drew you to it, and what were you looking for in a tool? Like, what were you using before, and what were you looking for that your current setup didn't offer?
So before I got into OmniFocus, I was on Evernote for my GTD system.
Gotcha.
Which is really interesting. And I had used that pretty significantly. I had quite a system set up for it, and it worked pretty well for me, but I realized that I was seeing everything all at one time, and that just didn't work. So when I was looking for something to replace it, I was looking for something that had basically two things. One, the ability to hide things without deleting them or checking them off, which is where some of the on hold and deferring processes in OmniFocus come in. The other thing I was looking for is scripting or an API. So as a developer, I know quite clearly that any app or any tool that I'm going to use, there's a pretty good chance it's not going to have all the features I want in it built in from the get-go, and I'm going to want to add to it. So I tend to look for things that have the scripting ability. You know, if you want an example of that, look at the review process in OmniFocus. So they've got the perspective where you can review things. My biggest hang-up with that is I tend to schedule my reviews, and I want to do those. You know, lately I've been doing them on Sunday mornings, and I know that if I add a new project midweek, that's a problem, because it's not actually going to show up in that review perspective until, say, Wednesday after that. But I want to see it on Sunday morning. And that became a problem for me. So I wrote a script that I run daily that will auto reset those review dates when it's next due for a review, and it will reset it to Sunday for me, and I don't have to worry about it. So now I have, on Sunday morning, I go into OmniFocus and the review perspective is loaded up. And that's purely because of the scripting ability that it comes with. And I know that whenever I've looked at some of these other apps, like Things 3 has come out, and there's just a lot of these things that continue to come out, but they don't always have that built-in connection that I want for scripting and for adding some new things to it. So that's something I tend to look for, and it's actually a pretty big deal for me.
Right, right. Let's talk about Things 3, because it took for the culture. Okay. Let's just talk about it briefly, because I got a chance to put the
beta. Is that possible?
Is it possible to talk about it briefly? I think
maybe.
So.
Maybe. We could try.
I used it. I got a chance to put it through the paces. It looks nice. I'm very much in the camp of, and you know, of too little too late for cultured code in a lot of ways. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I doubt they'll ever advertise with me at this point. But I mean,
sponsor gone.
Yeah, but I think that, and I think that that's part of this evolution of productivity apps, is that you need to be able to
be agile. You need to be able to iterate quickly. Things, I mean, Asana ran into this problem when they released their mobile app. They didn't have a mobile app that was really all that great, so they lost people. And I mean, look what, I mean, even with Evernote lately, you know, where they've changed their pricing models and removed features from people abandoning ship. When you've got a tool like OmniFocus, which has been pretty stalwart, like they've not really altered course. They've been pretty consistent all along the way. And they've got their diehard fans, much like Getting Things Done has its diehard fans. You know, they've got people like, this is what I use. And I'll be the first to say that I look at OmniFocus and I get tempted every once in a while, you know, because it's got, you know, it looks nice. The review, the forecasting, all the perspectives, everything looks, it's still top notch. And there's really not been that much in the way of massive changes in recent years. But What were your thoughts when you looked at, because you probably got a chance to look at things three or at least read about it. Like, what were your thoughts about it? Were they, you know, like just a quick impression of it?
It looks like a new and shiny to me.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that has a new paint job on it. Mm-hmm. And they've done a pretty good job with, say, all the animations and all the interactions that you can have with it. To me, that's pretty slick. It makes it fun to use. But if I were to put it through the paces of how I do things, it falls on its face really fast.
It's the same thing with Microsoft To Do, right? When they, you know, they just announced Microsoft To Do not too long ago, and they're saying we're replacing Wunderlist with it. Well, I've used Wunderlist. I don't use it regularly, but I do have some people that I work with that use it, so I have to keep I have to keep up to date with it. Yep. And then I looked at Microsoft To Do, and I'm like, this is. I mean, I think their quote was, we will retire Wunderlist when we feel that To Do is ready. And I'm like, ready. It's not even, it looks nice. It looks shiny, but it looks basically like a nice paint job. And there's some interesting features, but it's missing so like file attachments and things that are just fundamental to what the user experience was in Wunderlist. So to ask people to migrate, and that's where it gets tricky, right? Because you're asking someone to migrate from one app that you're shutting down, which you can do in a software as a service environment, because they won't be able to access it anymore, versus something like, I mean, I remember using IGTD for, I mean, it still ran on my machine, even though I stopped using it. Like, it wasn't like I could still use it very easily. And the interesting thing now, I think what happens with tools, again, like OmniFocus and things in particular, I'll use those two as examples, is that you have to pay for every version of the app, right? You still have to do that with OmniFocus, correct? And I think that's where they lose people. But I don't think that matters on the whole to them. You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of things.
Right. And I know you also have to keep in mind that, and I'm saying this as a developer because I build tools, not necessarily at this scale, but whenever you look at some of these things, you also have to keep in mind that there's very different demographics that they're trying to shoot for. I mean, someone who builds something like Wunderlist is shooting for a very different group than what OmniFocus is.
Right.
And there are a lot of cases, and I've met a few people now where Things 3, that is exactly what they need. You know, that is the tool for them. And it's primarily because they're not looking for anything fancy with templated projects, and they're not trying to defer things in any way. They don't even get the concept of contexts. Like, they just need a list of things to do when they get to a certain building, or they want a list of things to do whenever it's nice outside and I'm home. Like, they want that level, and that's all the further it goes, which to me makes zero sense, because how do you keep track of the projects that you have going on? Like, to me, I just can't even get my head around that.
Yeah,
but it works for some people, and that's what some of these companies are shooting for, because it tends to be, at least it seems to me, that if you look at the broader population of the world, at least the first world, I guess, when you look at that, it seems like the people who are using these tools, that would be a tool or an app that would be geared towards just the general user of a phone. Like, I run across a lot of people that just use Apple Notes. And that's how they keep their tasks, because that's all they need is just a simple list. And the group of people that are after some of the power features that, you know, if you're looking at power features for notes, you're looking at something like OneNote or Evernote. If you're looking for power features in a task manager, that's where things like OmniFocus or Todoist tend to step in. But the populations are vastly different between those two. And it's sometimes painful as a developer to figure out which ones you're going to shoot for, because the dollars behind them can be vastly different between those two groups.
Absolutely. And I mean, the business model is completely different too. You know, I mean, if you're paying for something up front, it's the old model. It's the old, when you remember when you used to be able to go into an actual like Apple store or reseller and walk out with a box of software.
Oh yeah. And you got the discs that you can go install everything. It all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, so it's a very different era. Now, I have an interesting hypothesis that I'd like you to consider as we're getting closer to wrapping up. Paper. So we're seeing a real renaissance with paper planners, the bullet journal, a slew of others. What's your take on those? Number one, like, does paper have any role in what you do? And secondly, do you think that the rise of the paper planner may be almost, I wouldn't say, I'll use the term backlash, but maybe a response to the overwhelming amount of not just stuff that we need to do or inputs that are coming at us, but the amount of tools that we could choose that are electronic that can help us with that stuff?
So that's an interesting question for you to ask me. So I have, sitting right next to me, I have a Rodian dot pad.
Mm-hmm.
I have four fountain pens sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Leuchtturm, 1917 notebook.
Yep. So the one that the bullet journals are generally used for. Yeah.
Right.
You and me are the same. I've got a whole wall of notebooks. I've got my pens. I mean, I'm still very much a paper person.
Right. So I have a lot of this. And what I have found is I have this tendency to want to use paper. Or, you know, I own the fountain pens primarily because they're tools that I like to use. And I know that if I write things down, I get it out of my head and I feel better about it if mm-hmm. I do that.
Yep.
And if I have tools that I like to use, I'm more apt to use them in the way I'm supposed to use them, at least the way I've set myself up to use them.
Same. We're on the same page there.
So I have found that for me, whenever I am looking at all these paper products, because I'm not going to... To be honest, I have considered moving a task management system to paper. I have no idea what that would look like. I think it would be a nightmare if I actually tried it. But it's something that I have considered. And it's primarily because I do so much on the computer that it's kind of nice to get a break.
I get
and
that.
I do all my journaling on paper. You know, I take all my notes on paper. Now, granted, I scan it and throw the paper away. But I'm still taking those notes on paper. And so much of what I'm doing with things like web development is sketching images and ideas that I have for a website or a plugin of some sort that I'm building. You know, I'm always sketching things out, it seems. That is so hard to do on my phone or especially on a Mac. I don't even own an iPad because I haven't figured out how I would use it yet. Mm. Okay, don't take my nerd card away. But you know, I find that paper has a very big place in my life yet, and I don't really see that going away anytime soon.
So
there you go.
So that answers part one. But so do you think that there's a real renaissance with the paper-based movement because of the amount of time? Like you said, so much time is being spent in the digital realm that having a paper planner is almost a way to give us more focus, more of a way to better connect with what we need to do as opposed to the connections that we have from everywhere else. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there might be. I've been running across, so a lot of my clients are small businesses or mom and pop shop type thing, but I also have a few corporate clients. And it's interesting how the corporate client folks, especially the executives in some bigger companies, they would go to the digital tools, and right now I feel like they're going back to paper planners. I've seen a lot of the Covey planners mm-hmm. starting to float around again. I've been seeing more and more of that. I don't know if that's just my circle that I run in that has more and more of that, or if that's actually a broader culture thing. I don't know. I don't know that I have a solid answer on that, but it seems like the paper companies and the number of specialty notebooks that I've seen on Kickstarter, it seems like there's more and more of that coming around, and there's got to be a market for it if they're still trying to come up with product design on that stuff.
And
that would be my guess anyway.
And if they're getting backed too, like if they're getting funded.
Yes, they're successful.
Yeah. Like that's a big thing too. Hey Joe, we're going to wrap things up here, but, cool. We definitely are going to have you on for the bonus episode. I want to talk about some of the other things that you do, and specifically when it comes to being a bookworm. But we'll get to that in the bonus episode for patrons. But where can people find you and your work online so they can learn more about you and dive deeper into OmniFocus and your world of productivity?
Yeah, so I run a forum called productivityguild.com, and that's where you can find pretty much everything I'm working on. I've got three different podcasts that I'm a part of, and those are a fun time. But yeah, if you go to productivityguild.com, you'll see everything that's going on there. I've got some things that I'm going to be working on in the future for some memberships with that. So it's a good time, but that's where I hang out most of the time is there.
Excellent. Joe, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
Big thanks to Joe for joining me this week, and big thanks to John Polster for producing this episode of the show. Big thanks to all of you for listening. If you want to get more information on what Joe and I talked about, check out the show notes and all the other goodies that we have associated with this podcast episode. And if you want to dive even deeper into the Productivityist podcast, you become a Patreon supporter and you'll get bonus episodes and all that stuff, as well as some other perks. Head over to patreon.com/productivityist to make that happen today. Thanks, man, so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And until next time, this is Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivityist podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.